Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If there is one story that has captured the imaginations of Americans for generations, it has to be The Wizard of Oz. The original book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum, was published 124 years ago on May 17, 1900, and it quickly became a classic. The 1939 film, starring Judy Garland, Ray Bolger, Burt Lahr, Jack Haley, Margaret Hamilton, and Billy Burke, was not an immediate box office success, but became a classic thanks in part to constant airings on television. And Broadway, too, embraced the tale, first with The Wiz, which won 7 Tony Awards and was later made into a film starring Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, and then came Wicked. That was first a 1995 book which told the story from the point of view of the Wicked Witch of the West. It was transformed into a musical that has been a massive success since its debut in 2003, and fans are awaiting the film version of Wicked, which is scheduled to be released in late November. So with that as background, UNC Charlotte is mounting a 4-day literacy and arts festival exploring these stories in a deeper way. That festival starts a week from today and runs through September 29th, and they have assembled some fine guests, two of whom join us now. Geeta Dorothy Morena is the great-granddaughter of the man who created this universe, author L. Frank Baum, and Gregory Maguire wrote the book, Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. Welcome to you both. What a pleasure. Morning. It's radio. Good morning.
It's great to meet you, Mike, and I'm very much looking forward to this hour.
Great. Thank you. Also with us, we're joined by Dina Schiff Masacci, a UNC Charlotte lecturer and project director of this festival, Charloz, Charloz. And Janica Lewis is associate dean and professor of English at UNC Charlotte, also played a major role in putting this festival together. Thank you both for being here. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to be here.
So, Dina, let me start with you. You're welcome. Let me start with you, because Dina, because the most of us think, a lot of people think, that The Wizard of Oz is a child's book, or maybe a movie that appeals to both children and adults because it has adult wisdom that filters out to people of various different ages. But we don't think of it necessarily as the stuff of college courses. You've written books about The Wizard of Oz, as everybody on this panel seems to have. And you've also been known to teach a class or two on this. What drew you to this story as college material?
So my draw to the story dates back to my childhood. So you are correct. Most people enter Oz as children. But what is fascinating about Oz is what it reflects about our culture, how it's adapted over time. And as it's adapted, it continues to reflect America. So L. Frank Baum's Wonderful Wizard of Oz really is a time capsule for its period while being rather progressive for its period. It is in many ways a story of inclusion. Now, inclusion for the time period, I don't know that we would call it quite as inclusive today. And it has all of these little hidden gems in it. It connects to the women's suffrage movement. And so there's a lot of interesting pieces there. It connects to, just about anything. I actually ran a Charlotte Teachers Institute seminar where I made the broad sweeping claim that you can teach any single thing with The Wizard of Oz. And I'm going to hold to that. You can teach history, you can teach literature, you can teach culture. One of our Charloz speakers is talking about how you can teach math with The Wizard of Oz. I am not a math person. No one wants me teaching math with The Wizard of Oz, but you can do just about anything with Oz. And so what I've done with the course at UNC Charlotte is we start with L. Frank Baum, and we kind of get into the history of children's literature, fairy tales, and a bit about the women's suffrage movement. Then we evolve into the MGM film, and we touch a little bit on LGBTQ and how that community has attached to the film. We talk a little bit about how that film kind of led into World War II. We talk a little bit about fan culture and how fandom has connected to these things. Then we get to The Wiz and we talk about the connections between The Wiz and the civil rights movement. And then we move on to Wicked, which I am convinced, although Gregory will have to tell me how right I am, that it is secretly Macbeth revised in some ways.
Actually, you know, I see The Wizard of Oz, Star Wars, as another version of The Wizard of Oz in so many ways, because the characters
George
are
Lucas
parallel.
George Lucas is a huge fan and certainly drew inspiration. So that sort of gets into how it's such a touchstone in our culture. I saw Deadpool the other week, and they make reference to The Wizard of Oz. Yeah. You actually can't make it through a full week in America and not hear some reference to Oz somewhere.
So, Janica, I'm curious about you, too, because you, too, are a college professor, teacher, and you, too, are fascinated by this story. But you also are fascinated by and very interested in the impact of The Wiz, which we will talk about, which is another iteration of The Wizard of Oz story. But for you, what makes this fodder for college students and college lecturers?
Absolutely. So I first taught The Wiz through a course called Black Girlhood in American Literature and Culture. I'm a researcher, write about Black girlhood, Black women's narratives, and was, I don't know why, I was shocked to find out that this, you know, generation had not watched The Wiz, was not as familiar with, especially the music. And I was like, we have to do this in class. And so thinking about, you know, the cultural history of The Wiz, first starting on Broadway in 1975, and then the film with which they became very familiar during their time with me and also with Dina, and of course, the music, the attire, the, you know, customs, how the cultural narratives really circulated for them. And then with the return of The Wiz to Charlotte, touring now, Broadway wrapped in August of this year. And so helping them understand the cultural relevance of The Wiz now, continuing the conversations that started decades ago.
And of course, the Broadway musical Wicked is here every other week, it seems.
At
the Bloomington.
So all in conversation, right?
Exactly. So this 4-day festival starts next week, next Thursday, for all over town. We'll talk about exactly where and what's going on here. But Dina, you have said that it is your goal for every single person who comes to see themselves reflected in the story. But don't we already see ourselves reflected in this story, The Wizard of Oz? Can't we find ourselves somewhere in the character, somewhere in the storyline? And isn't that what makes it so compelling for people?
Yes and no. So I think if you want to, and if you look for it, and you're looking to make connections, absolutely. And I think that's part of what keeps it going and why this story hasn't died at all. However, one of the things I found when I was running all over the city, having coffee with every human in the world, trying to make sure laws happen, is a lot of people dismiss it as, isn't it that old movie with Judy Garland? And this is, you know, it has a limited audience. And so part of what I'm trying to do is make sure we're not limiting the audience. So we have, for example, Amy Chu and Janet K. Lee, who did an adaptation of a different L. Frank Baum book, Sea Sirens and Sky Island. And they are coming and speaking, and their adaptation takes a Vietnamese-American twist on the story. And so I want to make it very clear that anybody could be Dorothy. L. Frank Baum describes Dorothy as a harmless, innocent little girl. She could be purple with green hair, and she would still fit his description. Now, Diana Ross, maybe not an innocent, harmless little girl. We could pick at that. But my point is, these characters can be anybody. And anyone who's placing a limit on them, it's a self-imposed limit.
So you have the original story, which we'll talk about with Gita, because her great-grandfather wrote the book, and then the movie was based on it. But all of these iterations tend to focus on different characters in this universe. The Judy Garland version was not the first movie about this, based on this book. The first movie came out in 1914. It was a silent picture called His Majesty the Scarecrow of Oz, which I understand you will be screening during this festival. Wicked focuses on the development of the Wicked Witch of the West and her relationship to Glinda, the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz. But this film points the camera at the Scarecrow, Janneke. How does that impact our understanding of the story? And in fact, how do all these different versions, which focus on different characters, impact our understanding of the fundamental story here?
I think each focus leads us to a character, a value, or even something like the idea of eternal girlhood, as we, you know, think about with various characters of Dorothy, which is how, you know, Diana Ross gets to play the 24-year-old teacher. So we are not as focused on one story, but how each of us come into this idea of what it means to live in society and relate to each other. And so as many versions as there could be many more, each focusing on something different.
So this story is 124 years old. It dates back to 1900. I'm sure writing styles have changed. Certainly the movie was 39 years later when it came out. And it just so happens on YouTube, you can hear one of our guests, Gita Dorothy Morena, read chapter one of her great-grandfather's book. And I want to play just a snippet of that to give you a flavor of the original book.
Dorothy lived in the midst of the great Kansas prairies with Uncle Henry, who was a farmer, and Aunt Em, who was the farmer's wife. Their house was small, for the lumber to build it had to be carried by wagon many miles. There were four walls, a floor, and a roof, which made one room. And this room contained a rusty-looking cooking stove, a cupboard for the dishes, a table, three or four chairs, and the beds.
Now that's a far cry from the house we see in the 1939 film, The Wizard of Oz. Gita, is that just because the expectations of the world in 1939 were already very different from those expectations that readers would have had in 1900?
Well, that's certainly possible and makes sense, you know, that bringing it to life visually on the camera and on the screen, we really want to appeal to where people are at presently in their life and what inspires them. So yeah, there's these shifts and changes as the story has evolved over time. I think it's interesting hearing the talk about the different characters and the relationship to it. You know, I'm a psychologist, so I look at things more psychologically and the underpinnings of why things happen and behave the way they do. So I like to think of Dorothy's story as a hero's journey. And it's a real archetypal fundamental approach to that we all resonate with, you know, that we're all on this journey through life, and all the different aspects of the story and as it evolves relate to us in different ways. And certainly you can talk about it in all different ways and teach about the adventures of the story in all different ways, but there's a place that resonates.
Gita Dorothy Morena is the great-granddaughter of L. Frank Baum, who wrote the original story, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. We have so much to talk about with her because she's a psychologist, as she mentioned, and she has written about this from a Jungian psychologist's point of view. We'll talk about that. And we will meet Gregory Maguire, the author of Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow
the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow, 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 follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick, follow the yellow brick, follow the yellow brick road. You want to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Oz.
Two different treatments of traveling the yellow brick road, the original from the 1939 movie, and then Ease On Down the Road from The Wiz, which was out in the mid-70s with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross. We're talking about this because UNC Charlotte is about to launch a four-day festival based on all of this, Charloz, which runs next Thursday through the 29th of September. Two of the masterminds behind that, Dina Schiff-Masacci and Janica Lewis, are with us from UNC Charlotte. Also with us, Gita Dorothy Morena, who is the great-granddaughter of L. Frank Baum, who wrote the original story, and Gregory Maguire, the author of Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. Before we talk about that, Gita, I'm curious, since you are very familiar with the original book, how faithful is the 1939 film that almost everybody in the universe knows to that book?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. When they did the movie in 1939, there were many writers and they went through many different iterations of the story, and they ended up with this one that actually follows it pretty closely. There's a few things that I think are significantly different. And one of them is the scene with the Wicked Witch, because in the 1939 movie, Dorothy, the witch goes after the Scarecrow to burn him with fire. And Dorothy is protective of the Scarecrow and throws water at the Scarecrow, and it inadvertently splatters the witch and the witch melts. And of course, we're all delighted when the witch melts. But in the book, what happens is the Wicked Witch has put an invisible bar in front of Dorothy to trip her and try to recover her silver shoes. In the book, they're silver. Uh-huh. And Dorothy gets pissed off and grabs a pail of water and throws it directly at the witch. And that's a really different story.
Yes,
about
it is.
A woman and really for transformation, to find your way home, to find that place inside where you can stand up for yourself. And I think in 1939, women were still seen as kind of protective of the friends and the man, and, you know, not confronting directly like that.
And I'm sure it had to do with Technicolor, the process that made that movie in color back then, that slippers became ruby red, because
right.
They photographed better in color. I mentioned earlier that The Wizard of Oz is kind of a story that has adult wisdom, and it's wrapped in this story for children. In addition to your being the great-granddaughter of the author of the original story, you have a book of your own that you've written from your point of view as a Jungian therapist, The Wisdom of Oz. The original story, Dorothy has to go far away from home to realize there is no place like home. And you say that journey reflects everyone's journey home. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at sort of how we grow up, we grow up at home, protected by our family and our early childhood experiences, whatever those are. And we have to find ourselves and who we are and how we function in the world as adults. So we have to leave our original home and discover ourselves through our experiences as we go through life. And I think that's part of everyone's journey. And I think the movie, the book really, the story really develops that in such a fundamental way for people. We have to, you know, just even in the original book with the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman and the Lion, takes courage. We have to find a way to solve our problems using our mind, using our heart and our feelings, and staying connected and coming into that sense of wholeness in ourselves and integrating those aspects of ourselves is what gives us a sense of our connection to who we are.
Gregory Maguire is with us. As I said, he's the author of the book, Wicked. This is a juggernaut, Gregory. I don't know that you thought about this when you wrote the book, but somehow it got out of hand.
Tell me about it.
And you are the recipient of that. This is the story told from, actually, it's the prequel to The Wizard of Oz. It's told from the point of view of the Wicked Witch of the West. What gave you the idea to explore that story from that point in it?
Well, thanks for the question, Mike, and how nice it is to meet everybody online here, I have to say. In fact, when I began to think about Wicked, it was not because I had had a lifelong obsession with the story, like most people my age, having been born in the mid-50s and grown up seeing it on TV. But it really was because I wanted to explore political and psychological questions about bullying, about scapegoating, and about the abuse of power of a government against its individuals. I had several different ideas to consider, and they kept falling apart. I remember thinking, all the writing instructors say, write what you know, write what you know. So what do I know? I know church music played with guitars, and I know children's books. Where's evil in any of that stuff? I mean, some people don't like church music played with the guitars, but it's not really evil. It's just personal choice. So then I think in children's books, there's no real evil in children's books, precisely because they're for children. And then I had this, I can't say come to Jesus moment, but I was walking along and I heard celestial music, and it sounded like this. And all my life, I had expected the Virgin Mary to come out of the clouds and confer, an appointment with me. But instead, coming out of the clouds was Margaret Hamilton as the Wicked Witch of the West. And she said, I'm wicked, it's even in my name, so pay attention. And then I really thought, if each of us are only vouchsafed one genius moment in one's life, this is mine. Because I knew precisely at that moment that everybody in the universe knew who the Wicked Witch of the West was. They only knew her by that name. She had no other name or identity but being wicked, and therefore she was absolutely the right person to whose story to tell if I wanted to consider what we do as a culture, as cultures, with the notion that some people are good and other people deserve to die.
But you mentioned Margaret Hamilton. This seems to be the major stumbling block of any story based on that character in this story, because Margaret Hamilton is the Wicked Witch of the West. And she created with that character probably the preeminent screen villain in the history of cinema. So yes. She can't be in Wicked. She can't be in your book. How did you survive that? How did you make that leap and with such success?
I'll tell you, Margaret Hamilton as the Wicked Witch of the West could win an arm wrestling conference with Hannibal Lecter lately in the news. I mean, she has him, beat cold. And I also understand, and the historians of Oz will correct me about this, I think in the original shooting script, or one of them, of the film, the 1939 film, they shot some scenes and Margaret Hamilton had even more lines that were deleted because they were just too scary. She could be so scary with so little. I always call The Wizard of Oz this enormous Technicolor film of 1939 starring Margaret Hamilton and some other child star wannabe. I forget who it was. To me, she is the movie. And she was when I was a kid. I loved Dorothy. I loved the adventure. But I waited for that powerful, frightening woman to come on the screen.
Geeta, when you read the book, read from the original book, the copy of the book that you had in your lap, on the cover of it was the Cowardly Lion. Not the Scarecrow, not the Wicked Witch, not Dorothy, the Cowardly Lion. Is there a significance to that? I mean, did L. Frank Baum decide that the Cowardly Lion was the center, the heart and soul of this story, or what?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that question. Okay. I don't know what he was thinking, but I think certainly the lion of, this place inside that has to find the courage to engage and feels really scared on the inside, but goes ahead and acts in brave ways. I think that he was reflecting something that all of us feel at times. And the lion does that so beautifully in the story. You know, he created this story by talking to the children. So he used to tell stories to the kids, to his own kids, and then all the neighbor kid kids would come over. And, you know, it became so popular to go to the bomb's house to listen to him tell stories that they would send a constable at 9 o'clock to take all the kids back to their homes.
Oh, really? And wow.
He answered the questions that the kids had. You know, where is this place that they go to? Who is, you know, tell us more about Dorothy. And the story is he looked around the room and saw on a file cabinet O to Z. And he came up with the name of Oz because the kids wanted to know the name of the place where Dorothy went. So I think the story, you know, appeared in a very organic way, which is interesting.
There's so many lines and so many things, moments in the film, at least, the Wizard of Oz film, that have become iconic. They've become part of the American vocabulary. One of our listeners on Twitter writes, in last night's premiere of Agatha All Along on Disney+, there was an Oz reference. One investigator said, "She's really most sincerely dead," which is what the mayor in The Wizard of Oz says about the Wicked Witch of, I guess, the East, when the house falls on her in the middle section of The Wizard of Oz. And then, of course, there's that HBO series that took place in a prison that was called Oz, for obvious reasons. The Wizard of Oz cemented Judy Garland into our consciousness. Yes, she was Meet Me in St. Louis and all those other wonderful movies from the 40s, the musical movies, but she was the heart and soul of this film. It was not a big hit, as I said, when it came out in 1939, because that was also the year that Gone with the Wind was released. And her big song in the film was almost cut from the movie, and yet it ended up eclipsing probably all of the other songs she made popular as a result of singing them in films, and it became her theme song. So let's listen to a bit of Judy singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Away above the chimney tops, that's where you'll find me.
I would wager 90% of the people in the world know that song. In 1939, however, most films were black and white. The Wizard of Oz starts out that way, it ends that way, but in the middle, when Dorothy lands in Oz and she opens the door, our eyeballs are assaulted with glorious technicolor. That one aspect of the film, Dina, it would seem to me, would have made it a hit in 1939, because it was so unique back then. It wasn't. Why? What happened?
So you have a bunch of things that kind of all converge on each other, but in some ways, it reminds me of the somewhat more recent, although I'm still dating myself, film The Princess Bride. Nobody knew how to market The Princess Bride because you have pirates and you have giants, but you also have a kid playing video games. And in a lot of ways, the 1939 film does the same sort of thing. Is it a kid's film? Is it a grown-up film? It was made because of the success of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. If Disney hadn't done that, then MGM wouldn't have taken on the trial of the wonderful, or the Wizard of Oz, sorry. And I think part of that is Snow White is animated, so very clearly for children. And now we're talking about a movie that is not animated. You have actual actors in costumes, horrible costumes that tortured them. We don't get to see the torture. We only see the beauty, but behind the scenes, that was quite the trial. It was very expensive to make. They made it as a piece meant to win all the awards. As you mentioned, Gone with the Wind won them instead. So some of it is luck of the draw. Maybe if they had made it a different year, it would have fallen differently. But some of it is a little too scary for children. Every single year, there is someone who sits in my class who is either afraid of the flying monkeys or the munchkins, oddly enough. It is not the Wicked Witch of the West oftentimes, although certainly she's the one that I think scares a lot of children.
Janica, the characters in this film, maybe it's because I grew up with them, and this is one of the films that is seared into my mind. It will never go away, and perhaps that's why I just have this wonderful feeling about every single one of them and all of the actors that made these characters and brought them to life. Is it because of that? Because I've seen it so many times, or is it just that good?
Well, all depending on perspective, but, you know, I happen to think it's just that good. But also thinking about all of the elements that play into why we like what we like. It's the story. It's who is, you know, playing, who's featured. If we go to the Wiz film, definitely the music. This is the first collaboration between Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones, and, you know, the songs that remain in our memory. And so I think it's all of that make the story, although my daughter, now 11, when she watched The Wiz, was like, why is it so long? So different perspectives, but, you know, there's something that remains. I'm like, you have to get to the end, or I'm not taking you to see it. So.
Both the MGM film and The Wiz function sort of like time capsules too. Mm-hmm. You have all of these actors sort of at their peak, and it captures a time that way.
And you've given me a great idea. I'm going to get rich making a TikTok version of The Wizard of Oz and The Wiz. They'll all be done in 35 seconds. It'll hold your attention. We're going to come back, talk about all of these things and more in just a moment in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about The Wizard of Oz, The Wiz, and Wicked, because UNC Charlotte has put together a festival that starts next week called Charles Oz to explore all this, and they've invited many people to town to be part of this, including two of our guests this morning, Gregory McGuire, the author of Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, the book that started the juggernaut, and Gita Dorothy Marina, who is the great-granddaughter of the man who really started it all, L. Frank Baum. He wrote The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Also with us, Dina Schiff Masacci, lecturer and festival program director, and Janica Lewis, associate dean and professor of English at UNC Charlotte, both of whom have put together this Charles Oz Festival that starts next Thursday, as a matter of fact. Gita, The Wizard of Oz was far from your great-grandfather's only contribution to books and literature. He wrote 41 other novels, plus I think there are 14 books, if I'm not mistaken, in the Wizard of Oz series. He was also a visionary, I'm told, whose writing envisioned television. This is in 1900. Envisioned television, augmented reality, laptop computers, cell phones, and more. Now, would we know any of those other works, or have they all been eclipsed by the enormity of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz?
Well, Disney came out with Return to Oz, and that combined the second and the third book, the Marvelous Land of Oz and his other book and combined them together and came out with Return to Oz. So many people are really attracted to that story and know the Wizard of Oz through that film more than really the book or even the 1939 movie. So yeah, it was Baum who at the end of his life created the Oz Film Manufacturing Company. And that's what produced the Scarecrow of Oz in 1914. That was done. I mean, he was quite a creative and innovative person. He wrote series books under different names. And one of the names was Edith Van Dyne. And at one point there was a publisher in New York who wanted to meet Edith Van Dyne. And he had to come up with how he's going to do this. And apparently Maud, his wife, pretended to be Edith Van Dyne, and they had a meeting, and he was relieved to know that they didn't want to work with him to produce any more books, because that would have gotten really awkward.
Each of the characters that he created and the characters that we've come to love from this Wizard of Oz film are so distinctly drawn, but it's all told from the point of view of Dorothy, good versus evil. There are two sides to every coin, Gregory, and Wicked flips the coin. And I think it also shows that there are two sides to every story. We never really thought of the Wicked Witch of the West as being anything but wicked. But you don't start out that way. And that's what your story shows.
That is what I attempted to do. I did not attempt to whitewash her, so to speak. Another word that we have to reconsider whether or not to use. I didn't intend to sanctify her or to, do hagiographic magic around her character. What I intended to do was to try to make her more human, which meant more complex and contradictory, just like all the rest of us. She had good intentions and she made bad choices. Who among us on this panel, I want you to raise your hands, has not done that? We've all had good intentions and made some bad choices and seen that our best intentions actually weren't well-founded or weren't well thought out, or just accidents happened.
And this story, the Wizard of Oz story is universal, but it's only universal if you see it. And there are a lot of people who probably didn't see it because it was not told in their vernacular and it was not told in a way that made them see themselves in the story. Enter the Wiz. Opened on Broadway in 1975. It was named that year's best musical. 3 years later, it would become a film with two of the biggest pop stars of the day, Michael Jackson and Diana Ross, as the Scarecrow and Dorothy. Talk, Janica, about the impact of bringing new life and new color to that story.
So we know that there's something about media. So being able to see it on film, even after the very dynamic exposure on Broadway, brought it to a larger audience. Despite how, Diana Ross ended up in the role that was originated by Stephanie Mills in the Broadway. So there's some conversation there. But she played, Diana Ross played a school teacher whose aunt was concerned about, her being happy in life. And so this idea of what home meant for her was something different than in the other narratives. But then she got to help Michael Jackson as the Scarecrow uncover the power of his own literacy. And so we talked a little bit about communities and villages. And Geeta, I love that you talked about the story being shared with children. And so we can think about the impact of telling the story to children and having them see it, dance to it on film. In addition to the major performances, you see several performances in community theaters. Mm-hmm. And so different generations are carrying forward the story.
And last year, you hosted at UNC Charlotte a discussion on the Wiz with musical theater writer, director, producer Brady Schwind, and he told students, if you want to preserve a story, reinvent the story. Absolutely. That's what the Wiz did by bringing it to a whole different audience in a whole different way. Just as Judy Garland had the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow in The Wizard of Oz, in which she pines for being somewhere other than Kansas, and being hanging around the mean Elmira Gulch, Diana Ross finds herself in Oz singing a song about pining to go home.
Here I am.
Diana Ross from The Wiz, but it is the presence of the Cowardly Lion in this film that has one of the Charles Oz interns who have worked on this festival excited. Here's Sierra Johnson and what she had to say about that character's importance.
So my favorite character is definitely the Cowardly Lion in The Wiz. I think that he's such a really interesting take on not only masculinity, but Black masculinity as it's represented in America. It's not something that gets explored really heavily in mainstream media. The challenge of presenting masculinity in a way that's accepted not only by the public, but by your own communities.
Do you agree with that, Janica?
I do. And, you know, this idea of what it means to be thought of as cowardly, as opposed to, you know, embracing what society or who society thinks you should be. And we can even think about leadership journeys, how, you know, the lion comes into his own, and some of the subsequent performances, Be a Lion, for example, performed a lot, you know, locally here. What does it mean to be a lion, but to honor, you know, who you are and to, you know, embrace the power within? So I absolutely believe in that.
So just as The Wizard of Oz benefited from these great performances by Ray Bolger and Judy Garland and Bert Lahr and others, just as The Wiz on Broadway benefited from Stephanie Mills' presence as Dorothy, mm-hmm. just as the movie benefited from Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, off we go to Wicked, the Broadway musical, and it benefited from two key performances from Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel. Menzel played the character that would become the Wicked Witch of the West and who was given a song that shows us the moment she decides to become her own person. She invites Glinda, played by Kristen Chenoweth, to join her, but Glinda can't bring herself to do that. She's limited, as she says, and that sets Elphaba on a road to becoming the witch we all know.
Glinda, come with me. Think of what we could do together.
Unlimited. Together we're unlimited. Together we'll be the greatest team there's ever been. Glinda, dreams the way we planned them. If we work in tandem, there's no fight we cannot win.
Goosebump moment in the play. I'm just curious, Gregory, Is that how you envisioned it? Is that how you wrote it in the book? Or did they really just blow it up?
Well, I think steroids were applied. And I don't mind it because a theatrical experience is a different experience than the experience of reading a novel. A writer writes a novel in complete isolation. A reader reads a novel usually in complete isolation. When you go into a theater with 1,699 other people, something different happens. And steroids are appropriate. But my goodness, my heart pressure went up at that. It's never gone back down in 21 years.
I'll bet. You came up with the name Elphaba for the Wicked Witch of the West. Because as you mentioned in the movie, she doesn't have a name. I don't believe she has a name in the original story. Where did the name Elphaba come from?
I was so concerned that people not think that I was trying to trample over or make fun of this great masterpiece of American literature and world literature, written for children, but yes, a masterpiece, that I wanted to honor the original author, L. Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz, by including his initials in the name of the character he created. So I wrote down LFB on the top of my notebook, and I practiced different ways of aspirating those letters into a word. And when I got Elphaba, I loved it. You know, Laphaba didn't work. Elphaba was great because there are freights of overtones of alphabet and of fabulous in it. And it's also not a pretty word. I didn't want her to have a gorgeous name. You know, it fit her because it's actually a little awkward.
Geeta, very quickly, did you know that story?
No, I love it. I love hearing that. I didn't know it. I wondered the same thing, so I'm so glad you asked.
A tip of the hat. I always wanted to acknowledge my betters and forebears.
That's very, very nice. This story, Wicked, will expand once again. The juggernaut grows because in November they're going to release the film adaptation starring Ariana Grande and as Glinda and Cynthia Erivo as Elphaba. And in a tip of the hat to you, Janica, and your daughter, who wants everything in 35 seconds, I've taken snippets of that film and boiled it down. This is the whole story boiled down to a minute.
Are people born wicked? Or do they have wickedness thrust upon them?
You're the one the wizard has been waiting for.
The wonderful Wizard of Oz summons you to the Emerald City.
Come with me.
What?
To meet the wizard.
Why couldn't Tess be? This is your moment.
I am Oz the Great and Terrible.
The best way to bring folks together is to give them a real good enemy.
You have no real power.
That's why I need you.
Don't be afraid. I'm not afraid. It's the wizard who should be afraid of me.
I think, Gregory, you're about to get a lot richer. Dina, talk about the Charles Oz Festival that starts next Thursday. We only have a minute left, but tell me where to go. How do you get to it? How does it all work?
Okay, so first, if you go to our website, charlaz.charlotte.edu, you can find everything in the universe. Thursday, we are in the Knight Theater. Thank you, Blumenthal, with Gregory Maguire. On Friday, we are at UNC Charlotte's main campus, mostly in the Atkins Library with a ton of people. Brady will be back. We'll do VR walkthroughs of the Wiz sets and all kinds of things. Please go to the website. So many things. Saturday, we're in Imagineon, and we have all of these New York Times bestselling authors who aren't Gregory Maguire, and they'll be there. And then Sunday, we're at the Dubois Center City UNC Charlotte campus doing the film restoration of His Majesty the Scarecrow and tons of other things. Geeta will be talking there. Please come to the website. I don't have enough time to say it all, and thank you.
And the website is?
charlaz.charlotte.edu.
Okay, C-H-A-R-L-O-Z. And I'm told that Gregory Maguire rarely comes out in person to do this. He's too busy counting his money. Gregor Maguire, author of Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, Gita Dorothy Morena, great-granddaughter of L. Frank Baum, the original author, Janica Lewis, associate dean and professor of English at UNC Charlotte, and Dina Schiff Masacci, festival PD, program director for Charles Oz. Thank you all for the Oz, for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.